We've got some announcement, at least some understanding of what's next for the Washington football team. It may not be enough, but at least it's the next step as we get continual reports on what's happening in Washington. First Take, Your Take, ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM, Channel 80, ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. You guys have slammed the Shell Penzo performance line, and you know I love it. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. That's the way you can get in on the conversation. A lot of you want to chime in. For anyone that hasn't heard the news as of the latest update from today is that the Washington NFL team will use Washington football team for the 2020 season. That's right. That will be their name for this season. So effective immediately. Again, this is according to Adam Schefter this morning. Washington will call itself the Washington football team pending the adoption of a new name. So that is not their permanent new name. The franchise is just announcing that over the next 50 days, their goal is over the next 50 days by the September 13th regular season opener against the Eagles. They will have gotten rid of the previous nickname on all physical and digital spaces during that time. So they won't have any change to their color scheme. They will still use burgundy and gold. The logo on the helmet will be replaced by each player's number in gold. So the Washington football team will debut its home uniforms, at least in theory, week one against the Eagles, and the road uniforms week two against the Arizona Cardinals. So they'll use these. It will be they'll begin the process, or continue the process, I should say, of finding a new permanent name, but fans will be able to purchase Washington football team merch from Fanatics and NFL Shop in the coming days. So that's the next step, as they don't have any looks like pending announcement of what the actual long-term nickname will be, but they don't need it for now. They'll go into this season using Washington football team. We've been breaking that conversation down quite a bit. I'll take some of your take on it. Tristan in Pittsburgh, always love it when you call. Tristan, what's your take?
Hey, Jason. So my take is actually on the augmented reality, but here's what I will say about the Washington football team. I think, honestly, they should be forced to keep it indefinitely as long as Dan Snyder is majority owner, for taking so long to revert back from the Washington racial slurs, which they held for the past however many years. However, my take is actually on the augmented reality and all the fake fans in the stands that we're going to have here in baseball games. I think it either has to be perfect, it has to be funny, or you can't do it at all. And here's my reason why. The reason is that as awkward as it is to have no fans in the stands, it's going to be even more awkward if we have bad fake fans in the stands, or fans that don't look realistic. They're going to be even more distracting. However, I am here for this. Imagine if Aaron Judge is in right field and drops a routine pop fly, and then Fox cuts over to just this very aggressive fake New Yorker booing him with every fiber of his virtual being. I am completely here for that, and I would love to see something like that. But don't do it if it's not going to be funny or perfect.
Tristan, you're totally right about that. I mean, I like the experiment of the concept of digital fans in the stands for sure. I think it can be fun, but you're right. It either has to be funny or it has to be incredibly well done. And give me booing people all day long. I mean, I'm in for that. I think it could be a hysterical way to watch it. Now, the timing of the Washington football team change has been part of the conversation today, and obviously something that I've clapped back a little bit with some of the points that were made on First Take. Alan in North Carolina. Alan, you want to chime in with your thoughts. What's your take on the Redskins, Washington football team name? Alan, we got you going once, going twice, trying to get Alan. Well, you know, hopefully we can get Alan to come back in when he calls back in, because part of what I said earlier, Max Kellerman has been, he's been, let's say, heated on this conversation today. I want you to hear what they said. And this is Adam Schefter, Marcus Spears, and Max Kellerman today talking about the announcement that Washington's going to go to the Washington football team, because I think as much as they're right about some, there's a timing issue that's simply being ignored. This is what they said today on First Take.
Washington is going to go with an interim name during the 2020 season. It will call itself the Washington Football Team. And over the course of the next 50 days, Washington officially will be retiring the Redskins' name, removing it from all physical and digital spaces. It will be going with the Washington Football Team. That will be the name of the team while it solicits the opinions of players, alumni, fans, customers, sponsors, the community, to try to see what it should be using for a nickname in the future. But with the season getting ready to get underway, with players getting ready to go to training camp at this point in time, they had to effectuate the change. And so the change had to go in. The NFL is putting out books with teams' names. And so the team has chosen Washington Football Team for the 2020 season. The uniform colors will stay the same. They are burgundy and gold. The Redskins logo that was on the helmet will be replaced by a number, the player's number on the helmet. But that is the team name that this team is going to be using this season as it retires. The Redskins name, it is the Washington Football Team going forward for this season.
Adam, thank you so much for that breaking news. We appreciate you.
Thank you, Charlie.
All right, guys, Washington Football Team will be the interim name until the adoption of a new name becomes permanent. I want to get your reaction on this. Max, we'll start with you.
This is why you don't get caught with your pants down, Dan Snyder. For how many years have I've been sitting here saying, change the name? You will change the name. Why not get out in front of it? Instead, they're way, way behind it. And now they have this ridiculous Washington Football Team. The level of incompetence because of the arrogance of that organization is staggering. This was easy. Any dummy could do this. Well, you couldn't see it. First of all, even if you didn't want to do the right thing, you couldn't see it coming. You couldn't see that you can't have a racist epithet as a team name, that was not going to last, and you have nothing right now. We want to do it right and go through the process. You should have been done that years ago, but at least months ago. This is bad ownership by Dan Snyder. He is an embarrassment. The Washington franchise is an embarrassment. I don't think they get it together until he's out of the league.
Max, this is your thing, and I agree with you, but I got to stick to one word you said, arrogance. Because I go back to the article where he was quoted saying, we will never change the name. Yeah, until money start going out of the window and you have no succession plan. So Dan Snyder's arrogance has caused him not to have a plan in place for the day he knew was coming. To your point, Max. And listen, whatever you want to call a team name, however you want to go through it logistically, the fact that you're not ready right now is because you said never. And now you have to go against everything that you wanted to do personally because you was going to tell the world, I'm not changing the name after so many people for so many years told you that this was the wrong name to have a part of your organization. Here we are, Washington Football Team. And I'm sure, listen, the players are going to play. Washington the players are going to get it done. They still going to get a check, and this is the NFL. But arrogance is why this happened. Arrogance is why you don't have a plan in place. It's why you don't have anything to show for
all of the things that
people have been saying for years.
Let's get to some Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Again, I'll say, the very first time that I ever worked with Sarah Spain, I remember laughing in the moment, in the conversation, off air with her, because she always referenced it as Washington Football Team. And at the time, I was like, I just don't get that. And we had conversations about it. And frankly, I was wrong, and I had the wrong understanding on it. I'm not sitting here championing any of my understanding on it. I think a lot of people had a better view of this than I did at the time. I have to say that loudly and profess that, because part of what I'll always do is be honest about my evolution and thought, and where I hopefully am getting better, you know, and things that I'm learning along the way. That being said, as much as we continue to look at, with this Straight Talk brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless, as much as we continue to look at how Dan Snyder has gone wrong and where this has gotten off the rails, there's a part of the conversation to me that has to at least accept the fact that legal items take time. And again, I said it last hour, I'll say it again. I've been a part of several different trademark issues in my life. Like that's if you've gone through any level of sports or entertainment or owned your own business, you're familiar with this. It is not a quick and easy process. It's not an inexpensive process. There are attorneys that spend time just filling through everything they possibly can to try and see if you're trademarking clear. And there are random issues that can be anywhere in the world that slow your trademark process down. Any opportunity here for the Washington Football Team to immediately change their name would have only presumed that they had already gone through that process. And if Dan Snyder did not until recently even finally acquiesce to this, why would he have made any sort of ground on the progress of trying to change the name? Look, I understand it's hard to give any benefit of the doubt to somebody that has handled things poorly over and over and over again. But at some point, aren't you just piling on if you're saying, well, why didn't you have a backup plan? Why would he have a backup plan? We already faulted him for not looking at it that way. So, in my mind, what Washington has done today makes a lot of sense. They've come out and told you, you know what? We're going to be the Washington football team, which is then going to allow us the time that we need to clear trademark law, which is then going to allow us to have some sort of momentum towards it. Oh, by the way, it's also going to let some of the stigma around our previous nickname die off before we get any blowback on the new nickname. I mean, there are a lot of different reasons why this actually makes sense. I'm not asking for anybody to give Dan Snyder credit for how we got here, but how we move forward is something that has to be at least assumed with some level of context. That's Straight Talk. Straight Talk Wireless. No contracts. No compromise. You guys want to chime in, we'll let you do it in just a second. But it's opening day of Major League Baseball, and I feel like it's a disservice to the sport not to get a little baseball conversation in, especially when you got Jess Mendoza today with Max Kellerman on First Take, breaking down who has the best lineup in baseball. Check it out.
Houston Astros. I mean, this is a team that I get geeked out about. I know the Dodgers, Yankees, there's some pretty sick lineups out there, so I get there's competition. But let's be real. George Springer, Alex Bregman, who I have as the MVP for this season, Jose Altuve, who's already won an MVP, Carlos Correa, Yordan Alvarez, a name a lot of people don't know, was Rookie of the Year last year. He hit over 20 home runs in the first 60 games of last year's season. I think he is going to turn some heads in just 60 games this year. This is a lineup up and down. Yuli Gurriel, I mean, I could go on and on and on. And they've even got guys off the bench like Kyle Tucker that can come in at any point. So I get really excited about this Houston Astros team. I know because of the sign stealing, they don't get a ton of love, but they're still ridiculously good.
Jessica, look. The Astros have this monster lineup. The Dodgers have a monster lineup. I think it's the Yankees, and I don't think it's close. And I want to take you through it. Forget about the batting order. Let's go position for position. Catcher Gary Sanchez is one of the greatest slugging catchers, home run hitting catchers in the history of baseball. Like, in terms of a home run threat at a catcher, there aren't many ever who've been like him. First base, they have a platoon, Jessica, of Luke Voit and Mike Ford. No one even thinks about these guys. One's a righty, one's a lefty. They're both 350 on base, 500 slugging guys. Like, when last seen in decent sample sizes. Second base, they got DJ LeMahieu. LeMahieu was supposed to be, like, Gleyber Torres was supposed to be second base. They're going to use LeMahieu as a platoon. But he's a Gold Glove caliber second baseman whose bat made him fourth in MVP voting last year. Third base on Duhar, one of the best hitting rookies 2 years ago. Professional hitter, goes down with an injury. They bring up Urshela, who's all glove, right? No bat. He was a 350, 500 guy. 350 on base, 500 slugging, 21 home runs, hit 314. Gleyber Torres now plays shortstop. Didi Gregorius, they let go of because there's no room for him. Not just to sign the ace, Gerrit Cole, but because where are you going to play DD when Gleyber's probably the best overall player on the team, who's now your shortstop? In the outfield, Giancarlo Stanton, before he got to the Yankees, hit 59 home runs. When last seen basically healthy and acclimated, he's a 59 home run threat. Aaron Judge, when last healthy, 400 plus on base, 600 plus slugging, 52 home runs. And since then, he's been a monster. But that was the last time he was healthy for a full season. Well, but Max, they're not healthy all the time. Right. That's why they have Brett Gardner, who slugged 500, can play all three outfield positions. They bring up Mike Tauchman, another 350, 500 guy, Jessica. Like, every single player at every single position, usually multiple at the same position, does that. To say nothing of a guy like Clint Frazier, who has, like, the quickest bat in the majors. You can't find him in that bat. I may be forgetting someone. The Yankees lineup this upcoming season, whether they're healthy or not, has a chance to be the best of all time.
I'll take my Astros lineup, this lineup, and not my Astros, but this Astros lineup against yours any day, because the point you made about health, and I know that's something, but you haven't even seen these guys on the field together. I mean, the way that this lineup is conformed, I love it. I love the Yankees lineup. I think it's amazing. But the Houston Astros and what they can do, the athleticism, the stolen bases, I love the versatility. And, I mean, we're talking like apples and apples. I feel like the Houston Astros have that advantage because of their experience of playing together, how long this core has been able to play. And we've seen it with what they've been able to prove on the field. And I love exactly who they are, especially they've got so many young guys continuing to come up like we see with the Yankees too.
But that doesn't, like, chemistry matters, I agree, in terms of the overall season. On the margins, that can make a difference. Teams that come up through the minors together better than mercenary teams, even if they put up similar numbers, you'll probably win more games. That's what history has told us. So I get that. But that really relates to all components of a team in the field, pitching, hitting, everything. Just in terms of your lineup, production is production. And Jessica, you know what else? When you look at teams where even the guys they call up, everyone I just gave you is a 350, 500 guy, like minimum. Everyone on the team. When you have lineups like the great all-time teams, the Detroit Tigers in 84, they just ran away with it. The Yankees in 98, the Mets in 86, those kind of teams where the Reds in the 70s, when you're going, oh my God, they won 100 plus games. They had the whole thing wrapped up in a couple of months. Those were the teams where you look at the bench players and the role players, all were hitting. They were all hitting. The backup catcher, the backup third baseman, whoever it is, that's the Yankees. The guys who may not even make the roster could be in the middle of the lineup in a lot of eras in terms of the numbers they're putting up. It's everywhere, Jessica. They don't have a weak bat on the roster.
2019 was exactly that. I mean, I agree with you. It was ridiculous. I mean, the guys they were bringing up, and you mentioned DJ LeMahieu wasn't even supposed to be a starter. He wasn't even on their opening day roster. What I like about Astros for 2020, what we're talking about today, right now, this team has a crazy chip on their shoulder. What do they have to prove? Everyone thinks the only way they hit is because they cheat. I can attest that this is a team that will hit without stealing signs. I mean, they are so talented, but they have to prove that now. Everyone's going to be looking to them to be able to show that this is a team that can put up crazy offensive numbers without stealing signs. Mm-hmm.
They will. They'll put up crazy offensive numbers. Altuve, when it looked like he was stealing those signs, don't take his shirt off. It looked like he was mic'd up. Also probably stole the MVP award from Aaron Judge that year. By the way, you could argue that even based on the seasons they had, let alone if Altuve was cheating.
Don't forget, it's a return to baseball. Tune into opening night action tonight. Aaron Judge and the Yankees visit the defending champion Nationals. Presented by Geico. Coverage begins at 6 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app, and at 7 p.m. on ESPN. Just because I love you guys getting your take in on everything as we go. Martin in D.C. wants to get his baseball take in, so let's let it happen. Martin, what you got? What's your take?
You got it. Good afternoon, Fitz. Thanks for having me, man. I'm just feeling really disrespected, man. We got the Nationals. I mean, we're reigning champions. We're, like, not even in the top five in the odds to repeat. And, I mean, we only lost one bet. We lost Rendon, but we still got the pitching staff. We brought everyone back. We got our closers. We still got Doolittle and Hudson. So it's just kind of – I'm feeling really offended that we're not even getting any love on, like, you know, especially in the short season, man. I mean, like, we got capability – to repeat, so, you know, that is what that is, though.
Now, hold on. Stick with me for a second, Martin. Like, Rendon's a big bat to lose, number one. And number two, I looked it up here. The Nats were 19-31 in late May, right? I mean, and we all remembered that it felt like they were a team of destiny in the playoffs. Don't you think, like, team of destiny at some point plays into why people aren't taking them as serious this year?
I can get that. But I don't know, man. I mean, I want some respect. I mean, we did it. You just gotta like at least throw us up there, man. We did it.
That's fair. That's fair. And I love your take on it. Thanks for calling the show. Thanks for getting your take in. And I get it. Like, when you are defending champion in any sport, you're looking around and saying, holy cow, why are we not getting the love and respect that we deserve? I think Raptors fans have been saying the same thing about an NBA season where they felt like they could still, and they feel like they could still make an impact. And we just refuse to talk about Toronto. So maybe you're onto something. I think that's what's going to make the 60-game schedule, by the way, so incredible. Everybody knows, if you listen to me very long, I didn't grow up a massive baseball fan. It's not the sport that feeds my soul. I'm personally more excited for a 60-game season than I have been for a Major League Baseball season in a long time because of the impact it means and the fact that there are so many stacked teams this year. Coming up, what should the NFL do about Woody Johnson and the allegations against him as a Jets owner? We'll get into some of that next. First Take, your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM, Channel 80, and ESPN News, presented by Progressive Insurance. I'm Jason Fitz. You just heard it in the update. Want to make sure to reiterate, Nat star Juan Soto will be out for tonight's game against the Yankees after testing positive for COVID-19. I only reiterate that because I think this is an important thing for all of us to remember. You can obviously hear opening day on ESPN Radio tonight, Yanks at Nationals. Coverage begins at 6 p.m. This is just a reminder of what we're going to be dealing with in every single sport moving forward. Just because you're in a bubble for the NHL or the NBA doesn't mean that this won't be part of the reality there as well. You should, as a fan, just prepare yourself for the at least likelihood that you're going to wake up some mornings in the process of your discovery that morning. You wake up, you're getting ready for the game. You're going to look around and say, okay, wait. Are all of my guys able to play? Has anyone or girls able to play? Has anyone tested positive for COVID-19? So Juan Soto going to miss tonight's game. COVID-19, we'll see how that moves forward. We'll see what it means for him. Also, we'll see what it means for contact tracing, as that's become sort of one of the new keywords for sports fans everywhere to figure out how far out the effects go. First Take, your take. I'm Jason Fitz. There's another conversation happening. We've done a lot of baseball today, but there's also some NFL talk to get into, as New York Jets owner Woody Johnson it's been alleged that he made racist and sexist remarks in his role as the U.S. ambassador to the United Kingdom. In fact, there's a great article up on ESPN.com right now from Rich Minney talking about the Fritz Pollard Alliance, and they're looking into it essentially at this point. This is the quote: "The Fritz Pollard Alliance is deeply troubled by allegations of insensitive remarks about race and gender made by Johnson." The statement said, "Allegations of this nature, if true, are damaging to the social fabric of our country and cannot be tolerated. While only allegations at this point, they are serious." I do want to at least take the moment to say, hey, these are just allegations. But when you see these sorts of allegations, it raises an eyebrow, especially right now in a world where we're asking for more, and we're holding teams, players, owners, front office employees, everybody around to a higher standard. So let's head over to the Shell Penzo Performance Line. I just mentioned that Rich Simini wrote a great article on it, ESPN Jets reporter. He joins us now. And Rich, sort of give me your takeaway as you start to look into this and see the allegations and what it could mean for Woody Johnson. What stood out to you as a takeaway?
Well, I think as the statement, the Fritz Pollard statement said, I would use the same words in my own vocabulary, is that it's troubling, especially it's troubling under any circumstance, and for it to come from a person in his position, a U.S. ambassador, an envoy representing the United States in a setting like that overseas, is really troubling. And of course, the leader of a franchise, but like you said, nothing has been proven yet. These are accusations. And the one note I would throw in there is, I don't know if the fans know this, but Woody is not the day-to-day owner of the Jets right now. He's still the owner, but when he left for London in 2017, he kind of passed the baton to his younger brother, Christopher, who's been the day-to-day owner of the Jets. And Woody's three-year term as ambassador is ending shortly in the coming months, and he could very well be back with the team by the end of the season. And if these allegations are proven true, I find it very difficult for him to resume his role as owner, given the fact that he would have been accused of saying racist remarks. That would be a tough one for me to go back into a locker room and face the players knowing what they know at that time. That would be tough.
And again, the allegations, he allegedly argued that black fathers don't remain with their families, calling that, quote, the real challenge. Also commented on women's appearance at the embassy and public events, and held gatherings at men's only clubs, preventing female diplomats from attending, and allegedly said that he preferred working with women because they're cheaper and work harder. So these are all, I'm just imagining Roger Goodell sitting in his office at this point, tearing his hair out, throwing a chair against a wall and saying, what's next? So you make a great point. Yeah. With him not being involved in day-to-day operations, what recourse could the league actually have when it comes to looking at this relationship from one of their owners?
Well, when I contacted the league yesterday after the CNN report came out, they issued a statement and they basically punted. They just said they're aware of the story and they're deferring to the United States State Department, which I thought was coming up small in light of the current climate that we're in. And I think the league eventually should have their own investigation into this. Owners like players are held to the same NFL personal conduct policy. And so if it's proven, you know, that he did say these things, whether they're racially insensitive or gender insensitive, you know, he should be penalized severely. You know, I know a lot of fans on Twitter saying they should make him sell the team. I don't think this is a Donald Sterling situation because they don't have him on tape like Sterling was, but I think he would be severely punished. And in his own locker room, in his own building, I would find it hard that an owner in the year 2020 could successfully navigate a football team with this on his record. Again, if it sticks.
We're talking to ESPN Jets reporter Rich Cimini, and you mentioned within the locker room, what's the relationship like between Woody Johnson and the players that are in that locker room now?
Yeah, that's the weird dynamic, is there is none. You know, he's been gone for 3 years, and he's popped. You know, he was at a preseason game last summer. I saw him on the sideline shaking some hands. But none of these players really know him at all. I think there might be one or two guys on the team who actually were playing when he was the quote-unquote day-to-day owner. So none of these guys really have a relationship with him. They do have a relationship with Christopher, who's a few years younger than Woody, and who actually has quite a good relationship, a good dynamic with the players. Christopher was the one who guided the Jets through the national anthem controversy in 2018. He really galvanized the locker room and I think won a lot of respect among the players. So I think, in my opinion, I think Christopher probably should address the team, perhaps virtually on a Zoom call or something, as soon as possible, just to try to explain to the players what's going on and, you know, just to try to clear his brother's name if, in fact, you know, it deserves to be cleared. But Woody's not coming back for several months. And when he does, you know, it's going to be very interesting.
Rich, when you start talking about the Jets right now, it just feels like there's so many individual Legos that build a castle that seems from the outside looking in to be dysfunctional, from Jamal Adams to Adam Gase and whatever's going on there. And now you've got this issue. Give me a sense of what the culture's like in that building right now.
That's a great question. And I would agree with you that from the outside looking in, it does look like, you know, it is somewhat dysfunctional. The Adams situation has been going on for several months. He obviously wants to be traded. I reported, I think it was about a month ago already, that he wanted to be traded. He is looking for a new contract. The Jets, my sources tell me, are not willing to give him that contract this year. I think they want to wait until after the season. And Jamal's been really, really critical of the team on social media. And actually yesterday was extremely critical of Woody Johnson when he retweeted the CNN story. So, the Jets have a major problem on their hand. And I think Jamal will ultimately show up for training camp. The penalties for holding out under the new CBA are really severe. And so I think he'll show up, won't be happy, will probably be upset, and, you know, who knows what he'll be saying and doing, but I think he'll show up. And so, yeah, this is the Gase situation. It looked like last year he was losing the team when they were 1-7, somehow managed to finish 7-9. And so there's a lot of stuff going on right now. But getting back to the players, I've spoken to a couple of former players, and they all say, you know, they want to hear from Woody Johnson. They want to see how this turns out. And I wouldn't blame the players if they're upset at their owner if these charges are proven to be accurate.
Rich, I appreciate you coming on. I look forward to when we can come on and just talk football, but you've done a great job covering all of the other madness around the Jets. We appreciate you coming on, as always, my friend. Hope you and yours are safe. Thanks for the time.
Thanks, guys, and same to you.
Rich Cimini joining us, ESPN Jets reporter, ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive's Home Quote Explorer is changing the way you buy home insurance. Now you can go online, get a custom quote, save both time and money. Learn more at progressive.com. It's always interesting to me because they say that winning fixes everything, but winning when the culture within the building is falling apart is even more difficult than I think we give it credit for being. We forget how all of these ancillary things seem to play in. And when you hear about the great teams and the teams that came together, usually there's a bond behind the scenes and a culture behind the scenes that's been created that allows that to happen. It cultivates it. That's not happening in New York. And now you've got allegations. And again, I will stress loudly, these are just allegations. We know that. But as this investigation moves forward, when you're talking about an organization like the Jets, how they get this fixed and how they handle it is going to be very important for the league moving forward. Coming up, the baddest man on the planet is back. But should he be? How excited are you to hear to see Mike Tyson coming back to the ring? We'll talk a little Tyson, get more of your take coming next. First Take Your Take, ESPN Radio, ESPN News. First Take Your Take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM, Channel 80, and ESPN News. I got to be honest, we're losing our minds on this show. Jason Fitz, I'm hosting. Behind the scenes, here's what happens during the commercials. Like, in case anybody ever wondered, peek behind the scenes. Whatever the big sports topic of the day is, it usually continues through the commercials. Through the commercial, I have found out that our Spencer, not Spencer, I'm going all over the place, Connor, one of the guys that works on our show, has decided he's now a lifelong diehard Seattle Kraken fan. Today, Seattle announced that they're now going to be the Kraken in the NHL. So he's a lifelong diehard day one Kraken
Happy
fan. I don't know if this is allowed at this point, but Connor has gone all in on it. I'm excited for it. But Connor, I'll give you, I don't know if Connor has a mic. I'm just throwing this out there for the world. Connor, can you defend to the world why you're a Kraken fan?
Well, you know, I lost my Atlanta Thrashers. One of the worst days of my life. They went to Winnipeg. But, you know, I've been jumping around from team to team for who knows how long, and I'm just happy to be here. I found a home. The Seattle Kraken, it's official. Please respect my decision.
I love the please respect my decision at the end of it is a strong, strong move. I'm still a little shook, though, Connor. If they stink, will you stick with them for the long haul?
Stink? Stanley Cup champions? It doesn't matter. I'm a diehard day one.
I don't even know how to process this diehard day one. Okay, we've all been diehard. We've all been diehard fans of Mike Tyson for a long time, especially if you're my age. Mike Tyson has come back. He's going to be fighting at this point. I'm not sure if I love this or hate this. I got to be honest. I'm a little scared. Mike Tyson is somebody that, you know, I use the analogy all the time of pay-per-view friends. We all made them when we were kids, like the kid that you really didn't give a damn about, but you were going to become his bestie if it meant you could watch the Tyson pay-per-view or WrestleMania. He's going to be fighting Roy Jones Jr. And he told everybody on First Take today in one sentence why he's going to be fighting. It's frankly because he can't.
It's because I can do it. And I can do it. And I believe other people believe they can do it too. Just because we're 54, that don't mean we have to start a new career and our life is totally over. Not when you feel as beautiful as I do. And I'm sure other people feel the same way. We're both accomplished fighters. We know how to take care of ourselves. It's an 8-round exhibition. And we'll be all right. Trust me, we can take care of ourselves. Listen to this, Max. When I fought Larry Holmes, he fought me. I knocked him out in 4 rounds. He wasn't prepared. He took the fight with me. And then when you think about this, he fought a couple of other fights after me. And then he went the distance with Vander Holyfield.
And then he beat Ray Mercer.
Yeah, great. So, hey, forget that. He went the distance with Vander Holyfield. And he went the distance with Oliver McCall, losing by 1 point. So imagine if he would have fought me with that experience that he fought Holyfield and the other guy, Oliver McCall, and had the experience, it wouldn't have been a 4-round fight. And that's my ego. That's my ego in check. That old man would have took me a couple of rounds. It's not the distance. And you know that too, Max. If he would have prepared for me, I'd have prepared for those guys.
Tyson telling us why he's going to be fighting Roy Jones Jr. Also, by the way, on the undercard, Nate Robinson versus Nate Paul. That should be an interesting one. Look, this is a pay-per-view spectacular. I want it. You want it. Let's admit it. I'm a little afraid, though. I mean, there's two versions of Mike Tyson. There's the Mike Tyson that we were all scared of, that as a kid, you had the argument in the playground over and over and over again about how much money it would take for you to get in to the ring with Mike Tyson, which, by the way, even when I was in like fifth, sixth grade, my answer to that was indicative of who I am as a personality. It was always before or after taxes and who's paying my medical bills. It's amazing that even then I was thinking about those stupid things. But on top of all of it, when you start looking at Tyson, there's the other side. There's Hangover Tyson, right? Like the sort of caricature, funny cartoon version that you watch on Adult Swim of Mike Tyson. I don't want that version of Tyson in the ring. I mean, that's the fear you take when you got a 54-year-old Mike Tyson who, let me say loud and clear, I know could still whoop my butt with one hand and there's nothing I could do about it. But when you watch him in the ring, I want to see him go in and I want to see him dominate. That's what I'm afraid we won't get. Any version of seeing some of the classics, some of the greats when they're old and maybe a little past their prime and doesn't look the same can tarnish what we're used to. I'd love to think that whatever this version of Tyson is will have the same effect on legacy as, let's say, you know, chubby Michael Jordan did. Like, we just forget that era of chubby Michael Jordan with the Wizards. I want to think that that's what happens, but I'm a little nervous about it, I got to admit. And again, undercard, former NBA player Nate Robinson versus social media star Nate Paul. If Nate Robinson doesn't kick Nate Paul's butt all over the place, he has to go into hiding for the rest of the time. That's what I know. I also know that we're all in for free stuff on this show, so Connor's now going to try and get the Kraken. If Connor, if you get us all free Kraken gear, I think we're all going to suddenly, at least little bits and pieces of us, will consider going that direction. Seattle Kraken, your new NHL team. It's Major League Baseball opening day. ESPN Radio Afternoon going to be covering that and everything else. Peter Burns and Alyssa Lang, thanks so much for hanging out with us. First Take, Your Take, ESPN Radio and ESPN News.